And joining us is David Worley. He's running against Senator Jim Guthrie. Which district is it?
District 28.
28. Okay. I knew it was 28 or 29. But David, welcome. It's good to have you with us this morning.
Thanks for having me, Neil.
Well, this isn't your first rodeo. You've run in some campaigns before.
Sure.
And I guess for those of you who don't know you, introduce yourself.
Yeah, so born and raised in Pocatello, so here in Idaho. I graduated from Pocatello High School. Right after high school, joined the Idaho Army National Guard, deployed with the 116th, that big deployment back in 2004. Everybody went to Iraq. And then served a mission for my church, came back, married my high school sweetheart, Barbara. So we knew each other in high school and both graduated from Poke High. And then I actually left Idaho to go finish up school. So started at ISU, but then finished my degree at George Mason University in Virginia. And we lived out there for 10 years about, and then came back in 2020. Came back because we saw that Virginia was kind of changing and not in a good way. And we're kind of seeing the culmination of that now, where Virginia went from being a red state to a purple state, and now is kind of in that transition of becoming a hard blue state. So we saw that on the horizon and decided we wanted to go back home and hopefully have a place where we can raise our children and our grandchildren and, you know, in a free state. And came back to Idaho and saw that some of the trend lines we saw in Virginia are happening here. So decided to get involved in local politics and kind of brings me to where I am now.
Okay. Well, you've decided to run against Jim Guthrie, who is one of the most tenured members of the Idaho legislature. So you're this is a tall order in this particular
race.
He's
been an elected official my entire living memory, but
okay.
Yes.
Gotcha. So what do you see that says you feel like constituents in your district are being underserved by him and you're asking for their vote?
Yeah, so I think you know, you had Rural Labrador on, I think, last week, and got his endorsement recently. I think he highlighted the key problem, and that is that there is a disconnect with a lot of our legislators between how they campaign and how they govern. So this is a Republican state, overwhelmingly. You know, the Republican brand has a lot of power at the ballot box in November. So a lot of people know that if you're going to gain political power in Idaho, you have to be a Republican. The Democrats really don't have a whole lot of say in how the government functions. And so everyone wants to say they're a conservative when they campaign. And then there tends to be this disconnect with some of our legislators, I think my opponent is one of them, between what they say when they're home in their district versus what they actually do when they're in Boise. And I want to rectify that. I think that we actually have a much more conservative district than we are being represented by his votes. And I think that I can bring a set of values and a philosophy of governance that is going to more directly represent the people of the district.
Okay.
Do you have some specific votes, David, that you would have been on the opposite side of Senator Guthrie? I mean, you have the luxury of reviewing this last legislative session. What would you have done different?
Sure. I think there's a couple key areas this last session, but one of them, I think, is a big one. It's been a top issue for a lot of voters, is figuring a way to tackle illegal immigration. So my opponent has been a longstanding proponent of what I call, you know, soft amnesty measures. So things like wanting to give illegal aliens driver's licenses. He also opposed efforts to cut off welfare benefits from illegal aliens. And then this last session, you know, one of the things that we've been talking about, I think is also an issue, is that Guthrie, because he's so senior, he holds the chairmanship of the State Affairs Committee, which is very powerful. And he has the ability to drawer, as the term, or desk veto is another way to put it, where a bill be passed from the House, go to his committee, and then as the chairman, he has the power to not even bring it up for a hearing or a vote. And in this last session, he did that with the two most important bills to tackle illegal immigration, one that mandated you verify and the other one that had penalties for employers who knowingly hire illegal immigrants. And I think that that was something that should have gone through, at a bare minimum, had a hearing and a committee vote. And if I was in his shoes, I would have allowed that, and I fully supported those measures.
So I actually wanted to bring up the issue of him putting bills in drawers. I think he, along with Senator Foreman, who chairs another pretty powerful committee, we saw this, and I think people could understand sometimes there are good reasons to put a bill in a drawer.
Absolutely. There's tons of legislation. Yeah. Not everything can get a hearing.
Yeah.
I completely agree.
But it seemed like there was a correlation between the bills that he put in drawers and just the bills he didn't like.
Correct.
Rather than bills that maybe had a functional problem or whatever good reason there might be. It seemed like it lined up well with bills he would have voted no on.
Well, and I think there's two aspects of this. One is a clear line of demarcation and different types of bills I think that we can make that's structural. So I believe that if the House passes a bill, at a bare minimum, it deserves a hearing and a committee vote because you have an entire other chamber and all their representatives who went through that entire deliberative process to bring that bill to being passed and sent to the Senate. And the idea that one man can just say to all those representatives and all their constituents, no, this matter shouldn't even be considered. That's a structural problem with the Senate that I think needs to change, and the House, because it works both ways. The Senate will do the same thing. They'll pass a bill, send to the House, and a chairman will hold it. So I believe that, yes, not all bills need a hearing, but if one chamber passes the bill, at a bare minimum, it deserves a hearing and a committee vote in the other side. And yep. To your point, yes, there is this aspect of, I don't like the bill. I don't want to be seen voting against it. So I'm going to avoid accountability by keeping it in the drawer. And that's a practice that's not just Senator Guthrie, but again, is a structural problem with both of these chambers I think needs to change.
David, I wanted to ask you about, this was very brief. I only saw it in the news for 2 or 3 days maybe, but I believe It was Britt Raybould in the House side was putting together a bill that would have retroactively made you ineligible to run against Senator Guthrie. And I thought, okay, that number one, I think you'd have massive legal problems with that. Because if you filed and you were eligible to file in that moment, you can't pass a law that
would have, this was being deliberated, I had actually filed.
Okay, so yes. All of that. So you were totally legal, you were eligible, and she was trying to pass a bill that would have disqualified pretty much only you, right?
Yes, I was.
We could have called it the David Worley bill.
Yes, pretty much. We do not want David Worley to run in District 28 bill. Is basically what it was.
Okay, you should be flattered by that. By the way,
I am, and I think that this gives an indication that there's different wings of the Republican Party, obviously, and I'd argue my opponent represents this more liberal wing, and I think this shows that they know there's this disconnect in the district, and they were afraid of having a credible challenger. And I would argue that's one of the reasons why Guthrie's been there so long is because there's been many people who've ran against him, but not someone who's brought, a pre-existing campaign infrastructure, a large political network. And so I was going to be a much more daunting challenger than he's had in the past. And I think they were worried. So, no, that was a hat tip, in a sense.
Whatever happened to that opposition bill? Because I remember we talked about it, maybe a couple of segments, and then it just kind of went away.
There were some conservatives in the House that knew what this was about.
Yeah.
And this is one of the things about my opponent that I think is important to highlight, this issue with so many bills being kept in the drawer. He has drawered tax cuts, regulatory reform, Second Amendment bills. There was one that happened this session with the Second Amendment, a great bill that he drawered. Illegal immigration, pick an issue, pro-life bills. So the entire gamut of conservative issues, people have lost bills in his drawer. So when people saw that this was being done to target me, there was a lot of people in the House who said, well, wait a minute, that man has drawn all my bills, and we're not going to let this stand, and we're not going to let his opponent be disqualified.
Yeah.
And they stood up and they stopped that in the House.
Yeah.
So this is the thing. My opponent has garnered a long list of political enemies because he has disrupted so much conservative legislation over the course of his tenure in the Senate.
I want to talk about your legislative district. Of course, you ran for mayor of Pocatello against Mayor Blatt 4 years ago. Is that?
Yes.
A little over four years ago.
Yeah, a little over 4 years in 21. Yeah. Yep.
Came up short there, but
sure.
the Pocatello proper voters, they lean more to the left than the district you're in now.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's a university town. It tends to be more of a, purple swing district. Yeah.
So what's different about this legislative district that you now live in? It's the same exact area, but it's just a different footprint.
So I think it's a fundamentally different race. So I moved, bought a house south of town in the Main Creek area, south of Pocatello. We wanted to kind of get more back to a country life we have. I mean, we had 33 acres in Virginia, and so we missed having land. Don't have that much now. I've got a couple acres south of town in the county. But District 28 is the area around Pocatello. It's much more rural. I think a much more conservative voting base. So it's Power County, Franklin County, and a large chunk of Bannock. And I think it's just a fundamentally different race than you're going to have versus the District 29 voting demographic.
Yeah.
So what does the rest of your campaign look like, David? I'm sure you've got events scheduled, things like that. How can people find out more about you?
So they go to my website, worleyforidaho.com. They kind of want to see the full exhaustive platform I have there. But yeah, we have a lot of events scheduled. So we're doing a lot of town halls, meeting in small groups, people's homes, and then just doing the regular day-to-day work of a campaign, going out, meeting the voters, knocking on doors, and trying to motivate people to get out and help us. And that's been great. We've actually had people from all around the area to come and help knock doors and try and make this happen.
Are you sensing, I mean, if you beat Jim Guthrie, that's going to be an upset that will be looked at statewide. Obviously you're running and so you're optimistic,
I think the most optimistic thing that, you know, indicators we've seen is just the enthusiasm. So we had an event the other day, about 30 people showed up, but it's a Downey area. So it's small number of people there. And as far as we could tell, the 30 people who showed up, I think 100% of the people who showed up donated to the campaign. Which is not common if you
know anything about politics.
Yes. So, I mean, it was a really well received and a lot of enthusiasm. So I do think there's an energy there because there has been this disconnect between the values of the district and his voting record.
You know, I find once in a while, and I think we actually saw this in the Pocatello mayoral race, where there are constituents and voters that still like the candidate, but they realize they've been there a long time, and and new blood is good, and it's time to make a change. I don't know if that's what's going to happen in this race, but I feel like those dynamics very likely could exist in this race.
I think so. So, you know, one of the things that I've talked to people who, and I won't name names, but people who know Jim Guthrie personally, and they've said just that. They say, look, I've known Jim for a long time. I like the guy, but I think that we do need new blood and new ideas, and we need someone else to represent the district, and it's just time. And that sometimes that creates a momentum of its own. This idea of the disconnect between the values, though, I think it's important to highlight here that this isn't just single issue, though, talking about legal immigration. So this past legislative session, he voted against a bill that was going to keep men out of women's restrooms and locker rooms, and also voted against the bill that put a common sense prohibition from teachers socially transitioning children in transgender ideology without notifying parents. And so these are some examples of some things that he's done in the legislature that are wildly different than what a conservative would do. And I think that these are the types of things now that become more open to people's knowledge. And they're saying, look, you know, even if I like the guy, I want to see my values represented in government.
Yeah. All right. Your website, worleyforidaho.com.
Yes, Worley for Idaho, and that's FOR.
Okay. All right. David Worley, good luck in your race. We wish